Hi, everybody. Welcome back to WFAN's Baseball Insiders for Friday, June 10th. I'm Sweeney Murdy, and pleased to be joined today by my good friend Mark Feinsand from MLB.com, MLB Network, and author of the new book, The Franchise, available today from Triumph Books, everywhere books are sold. A little history of the Yankees, and good for Yankees fans new and old. And we'll get into all that with Mark in just a couple of minutes. But Mark, first, let's talk a little bit about the current Yankees. Do you really think they're the best team in baseball right now? We know record wise. I think for those of us who watch them every day, we kind of tend to pick apart the flaws and figure out what's going to bring down this machine in October. But when you're a third of the way through the season, you have the best record. You kind of have to ask the question, are they this good? Do you think they're this good?
No, I think they're really good. And I think they are probably the best overall team in the American League. The question is, do I think they're this good? And do I think they're the best team in baseball? I still probably give the Dodgers a slight edge playing in a tough division with the Padres and the Giants, who are both having excellent seasons. And, the Dodgers are what I think 4 games behind the Yankees as of right now for best overall record in the league. But, I think the Dodgers have some more proven guys. The Yankees have some guys who I think we need to see do it for a bit more time. The rotation's been outstanding. But I need to see Jameson Taillon do it for a full year. I need to see Nestor Cortez do it for a full year. I need to see Severino hold up over a full year. So I think there are certain things that if they continue down the path they're going, they're going to be really hard to beat. And of course, we all knew Clay Holmes was going to be the best reliever in baseball. So we all had that one before the season, right?
Yeah, you got him as your preseason Cy Young Award favorite, right?
Yeah, of course. I had Cortez as the Cy Young Award favorite and Holmes as the Mariano Rivera Award favorite. Those were easy ones coming into the year.
I think the bigger question for the Yankees fans, not necessarily the Dodgers, but the way I look about it around the league is like, all right, who's good enough? Like, we're trying to figure out, okay, maybe the Yankees aren't that great, but who's better right now? And if you look at who the tests have been for them in the American League, they've played all the good teams they've played. They've beaten as far as maybe you expected to be good teams or just have records that are playoff positions right now. They're 6-3 against Toronto. They split their first 4-game series against Tampa Bay. They have 2 more coming up against them starting next week. They just won a series against the Twins in a little unorthodox fashion. It had to be slugfest, but they weren't winning slugfest a year ago because their offense couldn't keep up. So they won 2 out of 3 when their pitching didn't hold up, a good sign. They won 4 out of 7 against the White Sox, were a little disappointing, but still considered, I think, by many a team that will probably be part of the race before it's all said and done. They haven't played the Astros yet. And that's kind of where I'm going with this. Are the Astros what's standing between the Yankees and the World Series here? How good are they compared to who the Yankees are right now?
I actually think the team that's going to stand between the Yankees and the World Series is Toronto. I know that right now they're in third place, but you look at their team, they haven't hit all that much, right? They've only got a plus 21 run differential and they're 10 games over 500. If this team starts to hit the way it's capable and the pitching's been good, and I think Ross Atkins probably goes out and gets another reliever or two before the deadline, I think Toronto is the only team that is capable of going toe-to-toe with the Yankees over a lengthy series. I'm not discounting Houston. It would be silly to do that. They've been too good for too long. But remember, they lost Correa. They've lost some guys over the past few years, and they are 36-21, but they're playing in a terrible division where, you want to talk about like the Yankees having beat up on some weaklings over the course of the first half. I mean, the Astros, you look at their breakdown here, and they're, 3-0 against Oakland. They're 6-2 against Texas. They're 4-0 against Detroit. They did sweep Minnesota, good win. But they have a losing record against Boston. They've got 4-3 against the Angels, who started off well and now they're a disaster. They're 6-6 against Seattle, who's been a terrible team for the most part this year. So I'm not sure the Astros are this powerhouse. They certainly look, if you get some good pitching and Verlander goes out there and kills it in the playoffs, they certainly are capable. But I think I'd be more worried about Toronto in the long run.
As we are coming off of the Twin Series, the Yankees got a big game from both Joey Gallo and Aaron Hicks on Thursday night in their victory, combined for three homers, six runs batted in. Long time coming for both of those guys. But if you're looking long term, you know, the Yankees aren't usually ones that look at small sample sizes and look at bigger sample sizes. So outfield help is something that I think they are going to be on the lookout for. What do you think is available as we get into trade season? And how does the extra playoff spot in each league affect what's available when, because you're going to have more teams that are conceivably in the race?
The extra playoff spot's going to play in huge to this whole thing. Because when you look at the standings right now, you've got, I think I'm looking as we speak, there are two teams in the American League that are more than six games out of a playoff spot. Kansas City's 10 out, Oakland's 10 and a half out. Even Detroit, 10 under, Baltimore, 10 under. There's six games out of a playoff spot. Now, I'm not saying that Baltimore and Detroit are not going to sell. I'm not saying they're not going to become sellers. But my point is, there is a window there for any team's executive to believe that they have a team that is capable of contending if they go on a run. National League, you've got only three teams that are more than five and a half games out of a playoff spot, and that's the Cubs, Nationals, and Reds. So, you know, the Reds have already dumped a whole lot of players. The Cubs don't really have any outfielders to trade. The Nationals aren't trading Juan Soto. Let's get that out of the way, because I know that's what Yankee fans are waiting. Well, why don't we just get Soto? That's not going to happen yet, anyway. If Aaron Judge ends up signing somewhere else, as we'll talk about later on in the year, then anything's in play. But I think, you know, it will certainly play a role. The guy that I keep thinking, if the Yankees are going to upgrade one of their corner outfield spots, Andrew Benintendi makes a ton of sense. He's having a nice year for the Royals. The Royals are going nowhere. They're 19-37. And I think he is a guy who could make some sense and would not be overly, you know, cost prohibitive to acquire.
Let's talk about the Mets a little bit. We know what's going to make the Mets the really unbeatable team is the return of Jacob DeGrom, the return of Max Scherzer, and watching them go through the second half, you know, without either one right now, they're still pretty good, but you know, they're not, you know, we're not writing Subway Series tickets yet without DeGrom and Scherzer. So what do you see as potential stumbling blocks for the Mets here and what their needs might be going forward in the next month?
You know, it's interesting because I feel like if you get DeGrom and Scherzer back, you don't have many needs, right? This team's pretty darn good. And the fact that, you know, that Buck Showalter has them 17 games over 500, you know, in first place by a landslide, here in you know, in middle of June without a pitch from DeGrom, and you know, Scherzer's been out for a bit here, it's such an impressive job he's done. Billy Epler's put together a nice team. The additions they made this offseason have all panned out pretty well, right? Starling Marte is doing Starling Marte things, and you know, Escobar's been good, and Canna's been good, and obviously the rotation, even without those big guys, I mean, Chris Bassett's been okay. Carrasco's been really good. Taijuan Walker's bounced back from his terrible second half last year. You know, David Peterson's followed up. So they've actually been able to get by without their big guys. If they get those guys back, how are you going to beat this team? I mean, I think as always, you look and say, all right, like every other contender, they could probably use another reliever. Although, you know, the bullpen's done a decent job overall. You know, so relievers, you know, bullpen's probably one area you'd look, but this team is deep. The offense is clicking. And if you get those two guys back at the top of the rotation, it almost reminds me of the 0-1 Diamondbacks, where you sort of say, all right, well, they'll throw Johnson and Schilling five games in a seven game series and good luck.
I think in the last 2 minutes, you said if about four or five times.
Oh, sure.
And I think that's the biggest thing with DeGrom is that he hasn't thrown a pitch yet. You're in the middle of June. As much as we keep thinking, okay, it's not major, it's not major, it's not major, when you're missing half the season, all of a sudden, I mean, you do have to ask that question, when is he coming back?
Right, but you're not going to go out there and acquire another ace in the event that he doesn't come back or doesn't make it back to being who he was. You know, as long as Scherzer comes back and you can throw out Scherzer, Carrasco, Bassett, Taiwan Walker in a playoff series, you still got a pretty good shot. I'm just saying, if you do get both of those guys back at their normal form, it's going to be really hard for anybody to beat them. Of course, look, Billy Epler, we know, came up under Brian Cashman. Cash is the ultimate pessimist when it comes to guys coming back from injury and things like that. He always just goes glass half empty and assumes the worst. So I'm sure that Billy is thinking about contingency plans for all sorts of things. I just think if you know, Scherzer's going to be back, we know that. And DeGrom is an if. There's no question about it. But all the expectations right now are that he's going to be back. And even if he has to slot in as a number two because he's only 80% of what he used to be, I'll still take 80% of Jacob DeGrom over 100% of almost anybody else.
Going back to what we were saying about the trade deadline and the playoff teams that are kind of in the race, I think it's, you know, I kind of want to believe that the teams that are kind of on the fringes are probably going to be real honest in who they are, because we can say, for example, that a team is four games out of a playoff spot, but there's a big difference when you're 15 games over 500 and four games out of first place. And when you're, you know, 15 game, maybe 15 is a lot. How about say five games under 500 and four games out of a playoff spot, because you haven't proven you can play at a level that's, you know, that's going to make up those four games in a short amount of time when you're under 500. Whereas a team that's played well can say, listen, we're going to sweep this series, and all of a sudden we're right there, that kind of thing. So I feel like, you know, I would think the smart teams are going to realize whether they're pretenders or contenders.
I agree 100%. I mean, you look at the Marlins, for instance, right now, they're 25-30. They're 4.5 games out of a playoff spot. And Kim Ng's not going to look at a team that's five games under and say, yep, this is a team that's going to go all the way. Let's go out and buy. But I think what they will do in situations like this is, so we're talking here on June 10th. The trade deadline this year is August 2nd at 6 p.m. So maybe we don't see a slew of trades until July 31st to August 2nd. And teams, you know, the executives and the managers and the owners give their teams and say, all right, look, you are within striking distance. You're going to get a little time to show us that you're better than what we've been. And then, you know, then jobs are on the line and then people are going to get traded. I'm so not going to say that out loud, but that'll be the idea of give them every chance to go on that, you know, 8-game winning streak to get themselves in a position where there's a reason to believe. Otherwise, you know, you're going to see the Miamis and Colorados and Pittsburghs and Arizonas and, you know, teams like that start selling off whatever pieces they have. Because I, you know, the only team out there right now that's in that under 500 position, you know, within striking distance, who I just don't see as sellers at all, is Seattle. And that's only because Jerry DePoto does not believe in fire sales. He is a, you know, go for it. I think he also realizes that there were some expectations in Seattle this year. They have that 22-year postseasonless drought, a 21-year drought without the postseason. And, you know, it's time for them to get back there, and his job could be potentially on the line if they don't. So Seattle's one team, but I think the other teams that are on that fringe, I think, you know, you'll see them make moves.
All right. So you've written a couple of previous books. One, I believe, was called The Yankees Fans Bucket List. A list of things that, that every Yankee fan should know or should do. And the other was co-written with Brian Hoke. It's called Mission 27, a look back at the Yankees 2009 World Series Championship. A lot of fun stories as you get farther removed from that. This one is called The Franchise and more of a Yankee history book. Why choose this project? What made you want to do a Yankees history book?
So Triumph Books, which published each of my two previous books that you mentioned, was starting this series called The Franchise, and they wanted to launch it with the Yankees, given that we've had a good relationship over the past 6 or 7 years with a couple of other Yankees books. They approached me and asked me if I'd be interested in writing it. And I said, well, I got nothing else to do for about 7 months, so let's do it. So yeah, it was an interesting approach to writing a team's history. You know, normally you see a lot of these chronological histories. All right, well, let's start back in 1903 and we'll work our way forward. And some of those books are fantastic. I've been shouting out Marty Appel's Pinstripe Empire every time I've talked to anybody, because it's one of the best Yankee books I've ever read. Marty was a huge, invaluable resource to me on this book. because he knows more about the history stuff, the old school stuff, than anybody I know. So thank you, Marty. I like the idea of breaking up the history into different thematic chapters rather than just starting in 1903 and moving all the way forward. So we broke it up into six different parts. There was the architects, which is the owners, the GMs, the managers who made this team what they are. The legends speaks for itself, although some people will say, wait a second, Derek Jeter's not in the legends section. He's in the captain section, because that's a whole other section all unto itself. Then there's the game winners. Obviously, there have been some huge moments in Yankee history, just singular moments that didn't necessarily happen with Hall of Famers or anything like that, but Chris Chambliss, Bucky Dent, Jim Leritz, Aaron Boone, things like that. The acquisitions, we talked about guys the Yankees brought in from elsewhere. Roger Maris, Reggie Jackson, Jason Giambi, Orlando Hernandez, guys like that. And then obviously the last chapter, the rivalries. You can't talk about Yankee history without talking about the rivalries. There are two Red Sox chapters in this because you couldn't tell the whole story of this rivalry. There was sort of the 70s chapter and then the 90s into the 2000s chapter. But we get into the Royals history. I mean, people forget how fierce that was in the late 70s. Obviously get into the Mets. We get into the Rays and how that's become their newest rivalry. And we got to the Indians. Orioles rivalry as well. Because I remember, you know, I was a Yankee fan back in the day before I started covering the team. Then it gets beaten out of you very quickly. But I remember in 96, Torrey's first year, I considered the Orioles to be more of a rival to the Yankees than the Red Sox at the time.
Yeah.
And it was, those games were fierce and they had that big brawl in 98. It was, it was crazy. So that's how we broke it up. And obviously I went and talked to a whole bunch of people who I've had a chance to get to know over the years. The book is a little more skewed to the last 40 to 50 years because I had a hard time getting DiMaggio and Mantle and Ruth on the phone. So, I had to sort of work with who I could get. We talked to Bucky Dent, Dave Winfield. Willie Randolph was fantastic and a huge help. I went down to Montoursville, Pennsylvania, sat down with Mike Mussina at a diner for about 3 hours, talked to Jason Giambi. So a lot of guys who have had their own unique parts of this history of this team.
What's the one thing that, like diehard Yankee fans, you're going to say, well, I know everything about the Yankees. What's something in there that the diehard Yankee fan is going to say, you know what, this is awesome. This is why I need to read this book.
You know, I think hindsight is the best part of this book. And I sort of learned this by doing Mission 27 with Hoke. When we sat down with all the guys from the 09 team for that book, and it was 10 years later, and it was like, okay, we know what happened then, but now let's look back and talk about why it happened or how it happened or what it means to you now that you've had time to reflect. Talking to Willie Randolph about his place on the team in the post-Munson era after Thurman died, and how he considered himself one of the leaders, and then was eventually named one of the, a co-captain with Guidry, first African-American captain. I thought Willie had some great hindsight and sort of look into that and what it meant to him. And all these years later, what it still means to him, being able to talk to Mussina about his decision to go to New York and then, finishing at 270 with a 20-win season and the decision to retire. And now that he's in the Hall of Fame and all the rest of it, I like the idea of you couldn't break news on Babe Ruth and Mickey Mantle and Joe DiMaggio, right? I wasn't uncovering anything new about those guys. I talked to a bunch of people about them, their place in history, what they meant to the team. But I really enjoyed going back with some of these people over things that they have talked about a million times, but hadn't talked about in 10 years or 15 years or 20 years, or in the case of Willie, maybe 30 years. So it's just a unique perspective from some of these guys. And Joe Torre was great. He went over his entire run as manager. He was also gracious enough to write the foreword, which I appreciated. I think the, sort of getting a hindsight view of some of these incidents and some of these things. I mean, Bucky talked about, his home run. He never envisioned it was going to change his life the way it has. And here we are, 45 years later, still talking about it as if it happened yesterday. And hearing him talk about that was great. So there's a whole, Aaron Boone talking about his home run, and obviously he's gone on to become a manager of the team. So just a lot of great moments. Jimmy Leritz went through all of his big home runs with the Yankees, and So it's fun. It hits it from all the different angles, and it's not just the exact same stories you've always heard.
The book is called The Franchise. It's from Triumph Books. Mark Feinsand is the author. And of course, we know him from his great work at MLB.com and on MLB Network. Mark, thanks a lot. Good luck with the book. It's perfect for Father's Day. It's perfect for, well, my birthday is coming up too. So I guess we should mention that too. I was going to say there's something else. No, it's just Father's Day.
No, it's just Father's Day and your birthday. Those are the two things that matter in June.
I thought there was going to be something else. Like, no, it's just Father's Day. So I'll just throw my
birthday. You want to bring a gift to a Yankee fan at a 4th of July barbecue. There you go. There you go.
Go get it. Available everywhere books are sold. The Franchise from Triumph Books. Mark, thanks a lot. And we'll check back in with you as the season goes along. This has been WFAN's Baseball Insiders for Friday, June 10th. Remember to subscribe, review, and all that jazz. Also, check out the 30 with Murdy podcast and everything else at Odyssey, Apple, wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Sweeney Murdy. Thanks for listening.